Welcome to episode 86 of the Artist Empowerment Radio Podcast. Bob Baker here. So if you're a musician, you're probably familiar with this concept of house concerts, where you play in people's homes instead of typical venues. And a musician named Shannon Curtis had likewise heard of house concerts, but she didn't really delve into it until about 2 or 3 years ago. And once she did, she discovered this untapped niche that she was never aware of or never realized could be so lucrative. In fact, she just published a book a couple of months ago called How I Made $25,000 in 2 months Doing House Concerts. And that's pretty much her touring business model now. And so in part one of this two-part interview, I talked to Shannon and she spills the beans on how she discovered this gold mine of house concerts and how she sets them up. I know you're really going to love this, and it might even change your own perspective of how you should be performing live and making money with your music. Stay tuned for that interview right on the other side of this little musical ditty. Thanks again for tuning into Artist Empowerment Radio, and I know you're going to enjoy this interview because on Skype with me right now is the author of a new book called No Booker, No Bouncer, No Bartender, How I Made $25,000 on a 2-month house concert tour, and how you can too. I love that title. So I'm talking about the author of that is Shannon Curtis. So hi, Shannon. How are you?
Hi, Bob. I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic. I've really been looking forward to connecting with you. And it's kind of funny. Our mutual friend, Sheila Shapare, I think that's how you pronounce her last name. She actually introduced us by email some weeks ago. And I guess you guys met when you were coming through St. Louis, my hometown, a while back. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't respond to that introductory email right away, but then in my searches through Amazon and the Kindle store, checking up on the status of my own books, I kept coming across this book called The No Booker, No Bouncer. And then I made the connection. Oh, that's the Shannon that Sheila was talking about.
Yeah.
So I reached out to you and said, we need to have a little interview about this because it's a fascinating story. So before we get into that, I guess, let people know about your background as a musician real quick, and then we'll get into how this house concert thing kind of came on your horizon there.
Sounds great. Yeah, so I've been dabbling in doing music since I graduated college with a biology degree because I was supposed to be a doctor. Whoops,
that came in handy.
But I started a band right after college, and we did a lot of, we made a few records together, did a lot of touring on the college circuit, got a lot of experience. That was kind of my training ground for how to, to be a professional musician, even though the band never was able to sustain all of us, as professionals. We had to keep day jobs and that kind of thing, but that was a really good training ground. And then in 2006, the band had ended and I had started doing some solo stuff. And because I was now a solo artist, I did a lot more touring. I got in my Volkswagen Jetta and I drove laps around the country doing coffee houses and clubs. And actually I was doing college campuses as well and using the funds from those well-paying college gigs to sort of tour support myself to get out around the country and try to build a fan base in the big, major markets around there, because that's what you're supposed to do, right?
Right, tour and live the dream, and you got to go to where the people are. And you mentioned that Jetta a couple. I know you mentioned it just now. Yeah. I know it's in your book. You should get a sponsorship from them.
Totally, I need to work on that. Do you know people at Volkswagen?
I don't know that, but that just occurred to me. But so cool. I think that's really smart because I think there's a lot of musicians that initially have this idea about having a band, and I have to admit, I played in a lot of bands over the years, and there is something to be said for that full, having the drums and the bass and everything, and the full production. But I think a lot of musicians get so stuck in that tunnel vision that they don't think about, I could do this probably more effectively, more profitably as a solo or a duo. And you came to that conclusion too, right?
Right. Exactly. And, I was just out there trying to, do it like I have been told you're supposed to do it. Get into the clubs, return to those cities as often as you can, build a fan base, it'll grow. And so in that spirit, back in 2011, I decided I was going to really focus my energy on the West Coast because I'm based in Los Angeles. And I was going to really, really double down on that whole idea of going back to these cities and build a fan base. And so I had planned to do 5 months of touring on the West Coast, where I was going to hit 5 West Coast cities once a month for 5 months. So we were going to do Seattle, Portland, Sacramento, because I have a fan base there, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, once a month for 5 months. And we were just going to hit it hard and just, you know, go for it. The idea being that we would have a bigger crowd each time. And, you know, like that's how it's supposed to work, right?
Right, right.
Well, right before we left for that 5 month adventure, a fan of mine in San Diego had sent me a Facebook message. And she's like, "You haven't played in San Diego in a while. You should come play here. You could play in my living room and we could take donations for the show." And I was like, all right. Like it was one of those things that like, I figured, well, at least I'll make gas money. It could be fun. Let's go do it. Right.
Right.
So we went down there and I had an amazing experience. This was, there was the kind of energy in the room performing that every performer dreams of. Everyone was hanging on every word. I could feel this give and take, you know, experience happening in this room. People were really moved. They were really engaged. It was just a lot of fun. And so that was really interesting. What was even more interesting is that we left with way more than gas money, that people were super generous in the donations. And so this kind of like light bulb went off. I'm like, well, you know, we've been booking these club shows on the West Coast and our big plan on the weekends to maximize turnout. So why don't we book some more house concerts sort of as filler dates, you know, to keep us busy on the road and, and not sitting idle. And so we booked these, we were booking these house concerts up and down the West Coast as filler dates on my club tour. And over the course of those 5 months where we did that hardcore touring, at the end of the 5 months, on every single metric of success, the house concerts were outperforming the club shows. We were making more money. We were selling more merch. We got way more names on mailing lists. We got way more engagement from fans and social media and stuff afterwards. And they were just a whole lot more fun to do than a smelly bar, you know, gig-wise.
That is awesome, because usually there's a trade-off that takes place. Like I know a lot of bands over the years have discovered that, you know, if they can tap into like the corporate gig market or something, or play at, you know, business parties or something, that the money can be better, but the experience isn't necessarily, like, they're there for other reasons and your background noise.
Yeah.
But to actually make more money and like you said, and but also have a better experience as a performer connecting with your audience, like it's like, wow, where's this been? Now, had you ever heard of the house concerts before that? Because they've actually been around for a while, but maybe it was not on your radar at that point, it sounds like.
Right. No, I definitely had heard of them before, and I had participated in a couple, but they were more like the kind of house concerts where they are hosted by quote unquote people who host house concerts. Okay. So they're more like house concert venues, so to speak.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a couple girls in Seattle who do a great job of that. They've established a wonderful community of people up there, but they host, you know, a couple of shows a week, you know, so it's a community of people that they've created. The difference with what we were doing was that we were going to people who were following my music and asking them to host the shows, asking them to bring the people, asking them to invite the guests to the show. In essence, creating a new market in every place that we went. It was not tapping into the same market that other musicians have tapped into over and over and over again, but we're creating new ones. And I think that was probably one of the keys to its success for us.
That's really smart, tapping into your existing fan base. I bet you this house concert concept for them was probably new to them because they're not tapped into the music scene or what, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was probably an exciting, wow, we could have her in our home instead of having to go to a, you know, the local bar or whatever and see her.
Exactly. And that's something that we hear every single night we do one of these things. You know, house concerts are not a new phenomenon. I understand that. There's a long established tradition, but a lot of people haven't experienced that. You know, it's definitely a niche community that has experienced the house concert thing. So something I hear every night we do one of these shows is, oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing I've done all year. I've never been to a concert in my friend's living room before. You know, it's really fun to bring this like eye-opening experience to people.
Right. That's fantastic. I love this, how you were already a proactive artist, but you know, you were open to, like, sometimes our best opportunities come from unexpected places and you just have to be open to them, you know?
Absolutely.
And if you were closed-minded, you could have said, oh, I only play, you know, venues with, you know, these certain criteria. But yeah. You were saying, hey, what the heck? Let's just try. try it and see what happens, and look what it's look what the possibilities that it's opened up.
It's true.
It sounds like your whole like sort of touring business model has shifted over to this. So it sounds like, I don't know if that's a pretty good background. If you still wanted to add anything, we can do that. But I know at some point in your book, you mentioned how you were more proactive once you realized this first concert was a success. Where you then reached out to your mailing list, Facebook and Twitter followers, and said, "Hey," you found a lot of people were interested, right, in that next tour.
Yeah. So after those that 5 month period of time, and we were having all this success with house concerts, it was actually my husband Jamie who had the first idea. He's like, "Well, what if we did a whole tour of only house concerts? Let's go out in the summertime and just do houses." And I'm like, "Well, that would be awesome. I wonder if we can get people involved." And so I went out to my mailing list and my Facebook and Twitter and all this stuff. And I'm like, "Okay, I have this idea. It's kind of crazy, but I need your help if it's going to work. And here's what we want to do. If you'd be open to hosting a show, here are the basic requirements." And that's the thing, that the entry to the requirements to host a show, we keep pretty minimal so that it's accessible to the vast majority of people, right? Because we don't want this to be this, you know, only people with deep pockets or huge houses can do this. You know, so the requirements that we have is that we need space to gather, and you need to bring a minimum of 20 adult friends to come, which is a sizable group, but not undoable, you know?
Right. Most people that are halfway friendly have a network of at least 20 people that will come to their house or whatever.
Exactly. And, you know, because we do it on a donation basis, there's no upfront cost to the host. So the entry for a host is really, you know, easy. So I put this message out to my fan base. I'm like, "Okay, here's the basic requirements. If you're interested in hosting, and if there are enough people in your region interested in hosting, we'll come and do a show in your living room or your backyard or whatever." And we ended up that first year getting more requests than we could even handle in 2012 for the first tour. We had something like 75 requests. And we weren't even able to get to all those places that first year.
And how many did you actually do? Around 50 of them?
We did under 50 that first year. I can't remember the exact number, but yeah, it was a wildly successful year. I mean, we had figured out, okay, here's how much we would need to make each night to make this work. And we did a budget and we're like, okay, this is what we need to do. And we ended up doing twice as good as that at the end of that first summer, was like another huge light bulb moment. Like, oh, this is an actual business model. Like, this is not just something fun and wacky we decided to do. This is something that we could actually build upon and grow, which is what happened last year. We did 50 shows last year. And that's the title of the book comes from last summer. We averaged $500 a night during 50 shows last summer, all over the country, east, west coast, north to south.
Yeah, and from what I read in the early part of the book, you grossed around $25,000 in those 2 months, and once you deducted your expenses, there's still like a net profit of about $18,000, right?
Yep, that's
which
right.
Which is not too shabby at all for an indie artist, you know.
Not too shabby for an indie artist. I know. I mean, that's an actual living, right?
Now here's one question that my marketing mind had, and I'm not sure if you cover that in the book or not. But when you initially made this offer, that first offer to your email list, Facebook and Twitter, I think are the three things that you mentioned. Like, how many people did you have access to? Because I think that's probably a really key thing for artists that don't have already an existing fan base. It might be a little tougher. So how many people, like, were you able to reach with that initial message?
It's a great question. I want to say that my email list was somewhere around 3,000 people at that time.
Yeah, that's pretty healthy.
But, you know, open rate on those things is like 12%, 15 if you're lucky, you know. So
I feel your pain there, yes.
it's a healthy list to begin with, for sure.
So, yeah, did you, and then how many Facebook and Twitter followers do you remember approximately?
At that time, it was a couple of thousand, I'm guessing, at that time. Yeah, I mean,
would I be correct in assuming that you got more response through the email, though, even though the open rates were low, that they respond more by email than responding to Facebook posts?
It depends. Yes, I got initial response was definitely stronger through the email list. But then what I had to do was, like, if I saw, okay, we have, you know, a show in, let's say, I'm trying to think of a couple of spots. We've got a show in Sacramento and a show in Seattle. We really want to get something in Portland to kind of split the difference. Then I would target, like, on Facebook, I would go, "Hey, Portland people, I'm looking for a house. Do you want to host a house concert?" You know, so the social media actually kind of comes as, I think, more helpful as sort of a second wave. You know, like, the initial response is definitely more mailing list. second one was like, hey, I want a show in this particular area. Who's here and wants to get on board? And social media was really helpful with that.
So they both work together. Yeah. So that, and so again, yeah, I've been stressing the importance of a mailing list and a social media following. But yeah, so that's just another benefit of building that fan base and a direct way to communicate with them. So we kind of covered how you got started, and I guess the benefits are many of house concerts, and it's just switched your whole. You probably don't even hardly pursue regular venues anymore, do you? I mean, is it pretty much 100% now?
I haven't played. Okay, so with the exception of one club show that I did last year for a CD release show, I have not played in a traditional venue in 2.5 years.
That's awesome. I love that. Congratulations, Shannon. Wow. I just want to applaud you. I will do that. Here we go. I'm applauding you.
Oh, thank you very much.
what was I going to say? Oh, so have you found, though, now that you've done this a couple of times, are there, I guess, like venues where they'll rebook you, where the same people bring you back to your house, like their house every year? So you got now probably recurring house concert places, and then there are probably new people wanting to do it all the time, right?
Oh, absolutely. So there are definitely a good handful of people who have now like come to expect this as an annual event in their house, and their friends ask them. I have some people up in Seattle who are like, my friends are asking when you're coming to our house this year because they're waiting to schedule their vacation so they don't miss the concert.
My God, that's cool.
You know, I mean, so it's become kind of a tradition with a lot of people. And then the other thing that happens is that nearly every time we go to do a house concert somewhere, someone or a couple of people will come up to me afterwards and say, are you coming back to this city next year? Because I'd love to have you at my house. And so we've seen it kind of multiply within cities. So like we're spending over a week in the Seattle area this year on the summer's tour because of this sort of like growth that way. We're spending, you know, 3 days in Houston because it started with one show and now it's 3 shows in Houston, you know, things like that. It kind of multiplies and people have different social groups. So you're reaching new people with each new house that you're going to.
That's awesome. That's awesome. As long as they're not competing with each other, you know, friends, well, I wanted to, he was here first. But that'd be a nice problem to have, but
yes. But you know what we found actually, if there's an original seed host, they take a lot of pride. That's the thing. That's one of the things that's really cool about this is that when people are hosting you, they take a lot of pride in that they're helping you reach new fans and, you know, and they're supporting you as an artist. And so I think that when we get a new host in a city, the people that in our experience who are our first hosts, they feel proud that they helped create that for you in their city. You know, they've been a part of that, which is one of the most powerful things I think about this model is that it's a partnership with people in your community, people who support your music. That's a really, really powerful thing. You're no longer out there on your own as an artist. You've got these people who are on your side who are helping to create this world for you and create the market for you to sell your music and survive as an artist.
That's really cool. Yeah, I've often said that, if you can get your fans involved to where they feel like they're a part of your success story, I mean, you really will create a bond with them. And typically that involves just them spending money on you or, you know, contributing to a Kickstarter campaign, buying your music, attending your shows. But when they have you over to their home and share you directly with their friends face to face, that's even a deeper level of that commitment or that being part of the, hey, I knew her when, or I helped her, you know, get her started here in whatever, Detroit or whatever the city is. And so, I'm just really sold more and more on this concept too.
you went on tour.
Yeah. Well, actually, this is a kind of a personal story. Like another reason why I'm interested in this, I have a lot of creative interests. You know, I am a musician. I'm obviously a writer and an author. I do acrylic painting. And though this isn't a video interview, but since we're doing a Skype interview, you can see some paintings on the wall behind me. I do artwork, and lately I've kind of breathed new life into something that I did years ago, which was improvisational comedy. And I used to do that a lot and be in troops and all this stuff, and I started teaching it recently and just having a blast. So anyway, this friend of mine was having these monthly events at her house just to try to build community, and you know, once a month people just come over, potluck kind of thing. And I pitched this idea of would you like to do like an improv night one of these some month? And she sort of like was hesitant, what's going to happen? And like, let's try it. And she had 20 people come over, 2 hours, everybody laughed nonstop. And I realized that I don't know anybody doing the house concert version of improv parties.
What a great idea.
So I'm thinking about, this is an untapped, market for, because usually with improv, kind of like music, you're either teaching it, in workshop settings, or you're doing a show in a venue, a restaurant or something. But I don't think anyone has really explored the house concert. So it can work for a lot of fields, right?
Yeah. Oh, I want to know how that goes. You have to tell me. That sounds really cool.
Maybe we'll plan one when you're coming through St. Louis.
Okay.
Or you can host a house concert. I'll come and do an improv. When I'm on the West Coast, I'm actually a little self-serving, that I'm trying to see how I can use these tips for my own needs here.
I think that's awesome. I think that's really great.
Yeah, and so whatever your creative field is, what you're listening to this, maybe think about how you could apply this to your even if you're not a musician who's listening. So what are we kind of touched on a little bit, but what are some of the successful elements? Because I imagine now that you've done, you've got 50 or more of these in a summer, just kind of like venues, not every house concert is created equal. They're not all home runs. So some are probably really super well attended in the But what are the elements of a successful house concert?
Right. And that's really what the book really goes into. And I'll give you a couple of, of things here, but that's, we have done so many of these that we, and I say we, cause I travel with my husband. And so after every show, we're driving to the next one and we're analyzing every little detail of how can we do this better? How can we maximize this? How can we, and so that's the level of detail that's in the book. But, because you're bringing a new experience to people in their homes, mm-hmm. who've probably never hosted a house concert before, and their guests have probably never been to a house concert before, it does require a bit of effort to kind of walk them through how to help them create a successful event. And so there are some things that that are definitely imperative to making that happen. One of the things is that we found that a minimum number of 20 adults really is a good number. If there's going to be 8 people in the room, it's going to be awkward. It's not going to feel like an event. Right. You're still going to play and bring your A game, even when that happens, because it will happen. And it's happened to me, because you can be surprised. Even a crowd of 8 can surprise you. And maybe there's one person in there who will, host a show on your next tour and it will be amazing. So, you still bring your A game.
Right.
But we found that, we want the host to have a minimum number of 20 people there. And then also because we do our shows on donations, that's the sort of minimum number of people that starts making sense in terms of the collective compensation model, in terms of, being able to get paid. So that's one thing. In terms of the house concert itself, the space that you're in can vary. We do a lot of shows in living rooms, in backyards. We've been in garages, alternative spaces, that people have access to a photo studio or something like that, just an alternative space. But the one thing that needs to happen for it to be a successful show is I think everybody needs to have a seat and be focused and listening for the entire performance. This is not background music for a party. This is a house concert, because really what you're bringing and what makes this such a unique experience for people is that there, it's very connective. And so if you don't maximize the opportunity for connection, you're going to lose all the opportunity to make those connections and to eventually make money from this experience. And so a seated audience is really, really important. And to communicate this, I think people think, oh yeah, we'll have you over for a house party. And I'm always like, so it's not a house party, it's a house concert.
Right. Yeah, that's crucial distinction, right?
The crucial distinction, because here's how we're going to do it. Here's how we found it successful. And the thing is, I think that again, the hosts want you to be successful. They're having you over because they want to help you. You help your music reach new people. So giving them the tools to help set up a successful event, they're going to be receptive to that, but a seated, focused, listening audience, super important. We've also done a lot of thinking about the schedule of the event itself. You don't want it to cross the boundary from being a focused, connective house concert to rambunctious house party. The way we structure our events is we have the guests, we have the host ask the guests to arrive at a certain time, let's say 7 o'clock. This is arbitrary time. And then we have an hour of hangout time before the performance starts. But then the performance will start pretty promptly at 8 o'clock in the scenario. So in that first hour, we're hanging out. People are having a drink, maybe two, but not that third drink that's going to push them over the edge to unfocused. You know, right. We want them to be loose, comfortable. And then we sit down at 8 for an hour-long concert, and we have that focused time. And then lots of hangout time for merch sales and things like that afterwards, and hanging out as long as you want. But we found that structure is also really important, because if you don't give enough time for people to get comfortable, again, it can be kind of feel awkward. But too much time, and it becomes like this unfocused, like, right. What are we doing here sort of event, you know?
Wasn't that awesome? More accurately, wasn't Shannon awesome? So that's just part one. So in part two, we'll continue this conversation about how she monetizes house concerts and sets them up and makes sales offers and all kinds of cool stuff. So that'll be coming up in episode 87. Stay tuned. I'll be back with that in another week or so. In the meantime, I wish you much success and happiness, and I will talk to you real soon. So long for now.